Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome in to another episode of Turn the Corner, a Detroit Tigers podcast. I'm Kieran Steckley. With me, as always, is a man who doesn't need a time change because he's always turned up. He is Cody Stavenhagen. How you doing?
Doing good, Kieran. I like that. I hate daylight savings. Man, it was a little bit of a rough morning for sure.
Yeah. See, I went to my local gym, and around 7 a.m., which is, you know, six, as everybody's feeling.
Humble brag.
Might have been like eight other people in there, you know, and none of them had life, just like I didn't have life, you know what I mean? We're clearly just going through the motions. No real gains were had in the gym, at least this morning. I'm sure maybe later on. But yeah, it's a rough adjustment, but this is by far the best time zone, daylight savings time, whatever. And I can't wait for the next politician to say, we need to make this permanent and nothing will happen. Because I think that happens like every like 2 years. So you can bet on that. Okay. Well, you know what you can't bet on, Cody? I think we should actually start this way. Because we started last week's pod in kind of a fun way, somewhat serious, prisoner of the moment thing, knowing what we were doing the entire time, being like, look at this Matt Manning cat. Look at Matt Manning. Oh, man. And I will say, outside of, like, individual numbers and all that stuff, I was more looking at, like, demeanor, and I said this last week, but how are you going to respond when you give up a bomb? Like, all these things. And to that moment, I still stand by it. But we, you know, in the fairness of journalism, we have to mention that after that, his next start wasn't quite as hot. He went, let's see, he did three innings again, gave up four hits and four runs, and three home runs. So, not exactly the follow-up start that would have merited our discussion last week. So, all that to say, we are back. We're back in the Matt Manning experience full-time, baby, like we never left.
Just can't get rid of it. Just cannot escape the what is Matt Manning conversation. But hey, I wasn't surprised as much. Matt Manning really deserved props for what he did in his first couple spring training outings. He was really good. As I've said, though, I think we're going to learn more about all these pitchers in their final outings when they start going deeper. And that is exactly what happened with Matt Manning. The home run balls, I mean, maybe there's a little bit of randomness there, although he wasn't executing at the highest level. But Matt even said, like, it's not sustainable to only be giving up home runs. And he's right. At the same time, the velocity dipped. The velocity goes out for a third inning. Guy's throwing 92 again. What did we say last week? Like, I don't know. There's got to be some biomechanical explanation for why his velocity tends to dip. But it's problematic. All right. And it makes me think. It makes me let's compare Matt Manning to Bo Brisky. Bo Brisky, you know, AJ Hinch just said maybe his future as a starter isn't out of the question, but Bo Brisky's kind of been relegated to the bullpen. And it's like, all right, Bo Brisky and Matt Manning, both, you know, primarily fastball pitchers. Both when they're at their best, you know, 96, 97. Manning has had a lot of success with his fastball. He has a lot of deception and extension in the delivery that Brisky doesn't have. But, you know, both good fastball pitchers. Who has the better changeup? It's Bo Brisky by a mile. You know, you look at sliders, other breaking balls, both pitchers are pretty inconsistent with their secondary stuff. You could argue Bo Brisky is a more complete pitcher than Matt Manning. And this leads to my thing that if Matt Manning's name weren't Matt Manning, if he weren't a first-round pick, would this guy have already been moved to the bullpen? He does a lot of things really well, but he has struggled to execute consistently, to go multiple times through orders, to hold his velocity. It's something I've been concerned about with Matt for a long time, and we're seeing it now. So, like, this guy's really good. Sometimes I just wonder about his role and his latest spring training outing. Has those thoughts, you know, popping right back up in my mind.
Well, do you think it's... would you go as far to say that the value of Matt Manning diminishes greatly? Well... let me back this up real quick, because I know what you're on the record of what your thought process is. But I think there's thoughts in the Tigers front office, pitching clinic, all that stuff, that his value, him being Manning, diminishes when you put him in the pen because, you know, whatever reason. I'm not going to try to speculate. Because he's always billed as a starting pitcher. It's not ever really kind of, besides you and probably some others, no one's really kind of talked about Matt Manning, the bullpen guy. So the fact that it's really like not out there that much makes me think that it's not even sort of like a whisper conversation as much as some other kind of, should you do this, should you do that kind of stuff that we speculate on pods, you write about, your fellow beat writers write about, blah, blah, blah. So if he is better suited for the pen, then what role is that even? Like, that would be like, that would enhance the value in what he brings to the mound. Because I don't know if I have like a great idea of that.
I think the role we're looking at for Bo Brisky, kind of this multi-inning, like two or three inning bridge reliever type. Now, I gotta check myself here. I just went and looked at the numbers. Let's see what, if the numbers support this. Because baseball is a funny game, they don't. In Matt Manning's big league career, first time through the order, opponents have a 320 on base percentage. Second time through the order, down to 311. Third time through the order, which he hasn't done a lot, but when he has done it, 259 on base percentage. I think that what that actually tells you is, like, the version of Matt Manning that's on, like, and we've seen it, when Matt's good, he's really good. Problem is, he doesn't get to the third time through the order very often. Obviously, he's struggled with some unfortunate, untimely injuries. But it is funny. You know, I'm sitting here saying, I just don't know if this guy can really go deep in games. And the numbers say he has a tendency to get better through games. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But the bottom line is, man, wouldn't it just be fun to see some consistency from Matt Manning? He's still having a good camp. But the overall consistency of execution, I think we were reminded once again, remains a concern with that.
Yeah, and this is not me labeling excuses, but it is like another reminder of how cruel the game can be with the two balls off his foot last year, and how much that might have robbed him of rhythm, routine, and, you know, that kind of stuff. But that's the game, right? That's the game. It reminds me of a guy we're about to talk about, but I have like, it's not even my philosophy, it's just the reality of the situation, is that certain guys, especially in sports, but, you know, this applies to your profession, anyone who's listening's profession, this is just the way of the world. Certain people, because of certain perceptions about their ability, are given either more grace or more latitude to figure it out. Like, that's, if you played sports growing up, or like through high school, you probably had a guy that was like lazy, but he was really talented, and he got away with more than a less talented person would be. That's kind of the nature of it. And I think Matt Manning, kind of fits into that category where I don't want to say that they're going to make him a starter or die trying, but I'm saying we're probably closer to that than some other outcomes. And I think another guy that this that falls into this category is Joey Wentz, who we haven't really talked about yet, but it's worthy of discussion. He's pitched in four games, seven innings. He's got seven Ks, does have four walks, and he's only given up a run. And like I think as a fan base and as people who cover the team and talk about the team, I think we were more or less prepared for the Wentz experiment era, whatever, to kind of ride off into the sunset. Yeah, maybe he could, but there were the fact he didn't have any options available was literally the second sentence after Joey Wentz, left-handed pitcher, right? So I think we were, I don't want to say resigned to it, but almost sort of anticipating it in a certain fashion. And to his credit, he's shown that he's still worthy of giving a chance to. And from a empathetic side that sometimes comes out of me, like, I just felt bad for him last year. You know what I mean? This is a guy who just had to eat it over and over. And, like, if you just know that you're not performing well and there's not really much you can do in the moment, like, that sucks. You know, that sucks. And you could argue maybe he was being asked to do something that wasn't necessarily his best asset, you know, in terms of being a starting pitcher. Worthy of trying, don't get me wrong, but I think we could probably say that's not really in his future right now. So Joey Wentz is a guy to me that I feel comfortable. Well, let me phrase it like this. He's a guy that has the tools, the makeup, the size, all these things that we love enough. And he's seems like he's gone into the lab and done some things that I'm not giving up on that talent as of right now. Now it's only March 10th. Something could change. But as of now, I'm leaning toward like, still wanting to try to figure it out with a guy that has the attributes of a Joey Wentz.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point in that there are some comparables with the Matt Manning. Like, does Wentz have a longer leash than some other pitchers based on potential? And the reality is, yeah, he does. And that's also why I've projected Joey Wentz to make this roster. And what he's done so far this spring has done nothing but remind us, oh, yeah, you sure you just want to let this guy go? Because if he gets DFA'd, another team is going to claim him. He's pitched really well right now. I mean, he's earning a roster spot based on performance, kind of the peripheral conversation aside. You know, AJ Hinch basically said, I'm proud of Joey Wentz. He knows what's at stake, and he's come out with a good demeanor, and he's pitched really well. So that is the reality. I think it's probably helped that the Tigers were like, okay, you're just going to be in the bullpen. Like, there's a little bit of a narrow focus in terms of what his role would be, what he had to do to make the roster. And obviously some of the things he's worked on this offseason seem to have taken foot. His command's been a lot better. He's been able to execute with the fastball and then get into counts where he's able to use things other than the fastball, because the fastball got absolutely crushed last year. It has been refreshing to see the good version of Joey Wentz, to be reminded, oh, yeah, there's a really good pitcher in there somewhere. So yeah, like Manning and Wentz both fall in this conversation where evaluations can be really tough. It can be tricky to get sold too much on potential. At the same time, it's like, okay, when do you give up on potential? You know, I don't know, because if you give up too early, you know, that can be how people in baseball lose their jobs.
Well, the bottom line is you don't give up on potential when you've had whatever it is, eight straight losing seasons.
And also when you hang on to potential too long, that's how you lose your job too. So it's
not
easy.
it's a tough game, absolutely. And, you know, like, look, like, if he was 5'11", you're probably not giving him this shot. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. That's how it works. And these things are proven over time, is like these kind of profiles work out more than not. You know, doesn't mean it will specifically work for him, but you're going to have to, if you're Scott Harris, AJ, everybody in the brain trust, you're like, do we really just want to let this guy go? Do we really just want to let this guy go? And to me, if you wanted a reaction from him, you got it. You know what I mean? And a guy that's because I kind of I wanted to kind of wrap up some of the pitching guys that we hadn't really talked a whole lot about. A third one that I think worthy of this is, you know, he doesn't come into the category of the Wentz Manning stuff, but there is a shade of it, and that's Alex Faedo.
Absolutely.
You know he's got 10 strikeouts in 6 innings.
Wow.
And they're fun looking strikeouts. Like he's got his fastball is playing up, which I have just a real side note. Playing up is quickly becoming like my top list of cliches. I think just like everybody says on a just a person. It's like every single man is dating a woman out of his league, and every single pitcher has a fastball that plays up. Not always true. but I do think, and I'll fall into the cliche, I do think his fastball is playing up a little bit more than it has in the past, and then when I look at the numbers, I watch him pitch, I'm like, all right, so how do I really feel? How do I assess Faedo? And I'm like, well, I guess he's a guy that you're pretty glad you still have in your organization. He's a guy that, you know, could he get 10 starts in the major leagues this year? I think there's absolutely a chance that could happen. And if not, he actually is a guy that I see forming into a general use reliever more easily than some of these other guys. Now, again, maybe this is just my perception of things that could be totally baseless, but that's just kind of how I feel. And not that he's in danger of, quote, being given up on or anything like that, but I feel like Faedo's a guy that at least ought to be on the radar of, good dudes to have as options for Tigers fans,
Yeah, absolutely. I like the playing up comment because something like I don't go old school very often, but I think as a collective, Tigers fans, Tigers Twitter, we're starting to get pretty deep in like the pitching ninja school of thought. Like, I feel like there's a lot of things of, just reciting the metrics, like, oh, that slider had this amount of vertical movement and the fastball had, this induced vertical break. And that's good. Like, we can learn a lot from pitching metrics and pitch design and shapes. Those are instructive things. But, you talk to pitching coaches in the game, even forward-thinking pitching coaches, they'll tell you, like, it's almost the pendulum is swinging so far where guys are just chasing metrics more than they are pitching. And I think sometimes as fans, we can almost start to evaluate based on that too much, whereas execution is what matters. At the end, like, Matt Manning, great stuff. Sometimes, like, execution and sustaining that stuff is what's going to either make or break his career. I think one thing, Alex Faedo, his sheer stuff, probably not as good as some of the guys we've just talked about. But his execution level, his command, does tend to be a little better. And one thing I really like about Alex Faedo, his slider, I'm about to recite a metric, his slider generated a 41.3% whiff rate last year. That's really good. His slider can be really, really good. Almost why I like him probably long-term in a general use relief role. If he can throw that slider a high percentage of the time, locate a fastball, that seems like a role that can make a lot of sense for him. And he's interesting. He's having a great camp. Probably not going to make this roster. I have a hard time finding a spot for him. He's kind of a reminder of like the fallacy of the opening day roster, because if he doesn't make it, this guy's probably still going to pitch a lot of innings in the big leagues one way or another this year. So him having a good camp, making good strides does matter, even if it doesn't result in being one of 26 that's in Chicago on opening day.
Yeah, and he's also another reminder of get and keep as many arms as possible in your organization, especially, at the top. Because we still haven't seen, I know we're kind of going down the list here, but we still haven't seen Garrett Hill, right? And we haven't really seen Gibson Long. So, like, those are depth pieces that, as of now, are at least, question marks, if you would. And so guys like Faedo become even more valuable. And, I was looking at your mailbag just now, Cody, because we talked about, three guys for two spots, one spot in the rotation, Manny being one of them, Mize and Reese Olson. And, like I said, it's only March 10th. You did this mailbag a couple days ago. It's what is the definition of dog days? The definition of dog days where it's like we're close, we're not far, but we're not close either to some of these decisions having to be made. And as of now, I can't. Last week, I would have said Manning's high on this pecking order. I don't even know if a pecking order even exists.
I think Mize had a good outing. Olsen had a good outing. Manning kind of took a little step back. Like, yeah, I don't know, man. The pecking order is pretty even right now.
And it's weird. These guys have kind of, for obvious and important reasons, the Manning experience being one of them, and then Mize coming back from the Tommy John. And, you know, Reese still, you know, being this intriguing young guy. But we haven't spent a whole lot of time talking about the two additions via free agency to the starting rotation, Flaherty and Maeda. And that's not me opening to a segment to where I have an opinion, because I don't. I'm just saying we haven't really been able to kind of gauge much of anything there. And those are guys that either multi-year contract or, what was he, $14 million for Flaherty. Like, those are guys that, you know, like, kind of need to hit in order for any of this other kind of plans that we're talking about to work out. So, like, this pitching situation, as confident as we can be in the brain trust, it's not like there's been a whole lot of inspired confidence. And I know it's spring training, but that's all we can talk about. It's not like it's inspired much.
It's again, funny how we view and talk about spring training. We're obsessing over everything Manning and Mize and Olsen do and re-ranking them based on each outing. And if Maeda, you know, struggles to command the ball and Flaherty gets rocked, it's just like, they're veterans at spring training. It's fine. Like, what? Like, do any of us know what we're talking about? Do any of us know what we're doing?
No, and I'm sure a friend of the podcast, AJ Hinch, is like, these dumb MFers.
Yeah, right.
Like, they don't have a clue, and you know, to that extent, he's not necessarily wrong. The difference is we're honest about it, unlike some other people. So, let's go ahead and transition to this, Cody. So we talked about a lot of these guys, roster decisions, this kind of this, that, the other thing, and we're going into the second season with Scott Harris at the helm, and I think it's very fair to say that we have a better idea of the imprint of Scott Harris now than we did last year for, you know, a million reasons, obvious, right? So I was trying to think. I was like, what do I think is his biggest, like, impact on the Tigers organization? Because I don't remember the grade right now, but he got, like, what, a B or whatever in your fan pool, a poll, I should say. And I think that's fair, so I wanted to kind of like jot down what I think his biggest impact is. I came with kind of like three and a half things. Number one, I do feel like Scott's made me a smarter baseball fan, baseball observer, baseball provocateur. Like, I feel like I have a better understanding of some aspects of team building. I have a better understanding of what you look for individual players, traits, that kind of thing. The way he explains it, I don't think he gets enough credit for it. The way he talks about the team and the moves he makes afterward, and like, he lays it out there pretty plainly, and I've said this before, it always makes me think, like, you know, why didn't I think of that? I feel like I could have thought of that. I didn't, though, and that's a credit to Scott. Number two, I think he's had a real honest approach to building up this organization. He's never really tried to sell us on anything that was kind of BS, to be honest with you. He didn't come in and say, you know, we're going after this. We're going, even this spring training, when players are talking about division championships, he's like, yeah, let's get here before we get there. In the words of my mother, we'll cross that bridge when we get there, you know? And so, like, I've always kind of appreciated that about him. And a side note of that, he's never really tried to punch above his weight with some of the moves. I've never seen him do something and thought it was rash, you know? And one of his biggest tests was the Eduardo Rodriguez situation at the trade deadline last year. And he was quick to say, like, this is not a bad guy thing. Eduardo has the contractual right to do this. He exercised it. That's fine. Now, sure behind closed doors he wasn't as candid, but you know, as a facing of the organization, like I think that's a good thing. And three, everyone is hyped about this farm system. And a lot of these guys were brought in by the previous regime, so they deserve credit. And even some hires like Garko, credit to the previous regime. That, I mean, that needs to be stated. But at the same time, I do feel like some prospect advancement is the result of that the underbelly of the organizational stuff that Scott Harris has either brought on, added to, or enhanced in some other way. So those are kind of the things I think is kind of like his biggest impact into what is still a very young tenure as a president of baseball ops. And keep in mind, first time doing this as well. So that makes me think, like, whenever there's optimism for the healthy organization, it's really tied to him and what he's doing. And there are others that deserve credit too. I don't want to take away from that. But I feel like he is a big part of that as a man in his position. So when you kind of think of Scott Harris and his impact in the organization, this is, you know, you see this stuff day to day. So what kind of comes to mind for you?
Yeah, right now it's all very hard to quantify, which is what makes this an interesting discussion. Like, I think Scott Harris is doing a good job. I'm going to be real. I think he is. I don't think he's perfect. I think he's had a couple mistakes in his tenure, but I think just the baseball vocabulary, the thought process, the profile, like the process behind closed doors, I think is vastly improved over the Avila regime. And we will see over the next few years how much of a difference that actually makes. I think Ryan Garko, Gabe Rivas, the player development staff, deserves a ton of credit for the gains that the farm has made. Realistically, more credit than Harris, because most of these weren't his guys. But I'm going to tell you, I don't think having Scott Harris leading the organization is doing anything but helping speed some of those developmental processes along. This is a guy who gets it, who can take part in these conversations. I think when he talks to players, they respect that he is able to have real detailed conversations about their games and how he wants to see them improve. This is a guy who surely has brought some of his experience and thought patterns from other organizations over to help some of the things that are going on behind the scenes in Detroit. But then when I really think about it, it's like, okay, what are the biggest W's of the Scott Harris tenure so far? And it's like, I don't know. Like, you know, in terms of part of it is you just need time in baseball to understand how specific moves are really going to work out. I mean, right now, Andy Abanez looks like a W. It's not a massive win, but like, what's Scott's philosophy? Stacking good baseball decisions on top of each other. Well, Andy Abanez was a good one. Michael Lorenzen was a good one. Like, you can see a few of these small moves that have worked out. There have been a couple that haven't worked out. That's to be expected. Ultimately, what will define his tenure is you got to get some W's, you got to get some pelts on the wall, some real moves that advance this organization forward. But maybe the Cole Keith contract extension can be one of those. Right now, that's in the W column. We'll see how it ages. That's all to say, it's still going to take a few years before we really, really know. But based on what I've seen and observed, I think you can feel pretty good about the leadership the organization has right now.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple things that he also deserves credit for. Number one, there's out of 100 scenarios of a first-time president of baseball ops coming into an organization that's going to have to do a reset rebuild, but also has a World Series winning manager, I don't think a lot of people would be able to handle all those things. Because we talked about the rebuild being a little janky at times. Like, where does it really start? You know, where does it reset? You know, that kind of thing. And he deserves credit for making this pretty seamless. AJ deserves credit for, you know, being in a weird spot where, like, you have to work with a guy who didn't hire you. Like, the history of sports tells you those relationships don't necessarily work out. And maybe this won't work out, but I think it's safe to say this is a very aligned organization right now. And that is a credit to Scott, it's a credit to AJ, it's a credit to Chris as well. So those are things that make you feel good. You're right about the time aspect. I was going to bring up the contract for Colt Keith. I would say the open-mindedness about that is probably more something we can give him credit for right now, as opposed to whether the contract works out. And then I think, honestly, we'll see how it plays out. But, oh, wait, what was that? I think Wyatt Langford just hit another home run. The gall to take Max Clark over Wyatt Langford is something that is either going to make him a genius or an idiot. And then, of course, you know, we always say McGonagall's a part of that, and, you know, it's a big structure. But he went against the grain. The last time with a top three pick, Tigers president of baseball ops went against the grain, it nearly killed him in the eyes of fans, and that's Jobe Overmeyer, and looking all right now. But the Max Clark thing with time is going to determine a lot, because he had to make that move knowing the returns early were not going to be great. Because obviously Langford deserves credit, but I don't think anyone who was, you know, watching college baseball or into the draft is like shocked that Langford's doing what he's doing. So I think open-mindedness and goal are also two positive traits for young little Scotty H.
Yeah, you know, a couple of things I'm not sure of. Scott seemed like he has a tendency to slow play versus rush prospects. That's a delicate balance, but based on Keith Malloy not getting up last year, looking into, like, I think you'd feel better going into this season if Colt Keith had a month worth of major league at bats under his belt. You know, we could be having a similar conversation with Jackson Jobe this year. If Jobe lights it up like it appears he can, is he going to debut? How soon will he debut? These are some things to monitor. The roster building philosophy, obviously, Scott's taken a very measured approach. I think the majority of his acquisitions make a lot of sense, but it's like, okay, is there some GMs would probably, Dave Dombrowski would probably be more aggressive. Granted, you know, when he was Tigers GM, and even now it's a different world, but like the JD Martinez conversation, Scott's really committed to these young hitters, you know, maybe overcommitted. How will that ultimately work out both this year and beyond? Those are some things that I think we still got to watch as his tenure goes along here.
Yeah, for sure. And I think two words to kind of wrap up this part of it, conviction and deliberation. He's very deliberate with his actions, and he's yet to really make a moving move. That was weird. And that's okay. Eventually, we talked about this before, eventually that's going to have to change. But I think, you know, how do you build a house? You don't start with the roof. You know, you start with the foundation. And I think he's at the very least made a solid foundation for the organization. And you got to give him credit. He's got Tigers fans thinking maybe could win a division in year two of his tenure. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's
another. Not bad. I do got to circle back. At the start of this conversation, you said he's made you a better baseball provocateur. I think that's got to become in your Twitter bio, man. Baseball provocateur. What a phrase.
I'm due for an update, so maybe I'll do that. okay. Let's kind of a pitching heavy beginning there, Cody. Let's go to some hitters. And I talked about the category earlier of pitchers that were worthy talking about. I also did some position players that I was like, you know, like spring training, I'm good. Like, I don't really need to see all that much in order to feel satisfied with the spring training experience. And this is, of course, me being a dumb observer of the game and not, like, you know, the things that they're actually working on in the lab and all that stuff. But just from what I see in the games and from what I read and what people are saying, like, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good on these guys. And that's the aforementioned Colt Keith is kind of number one on this list. He had a RBI. I think it was an RBI. He definitely had a nice base knock today. Yeah, yep. RBI. And he looks comfortable. He looks like a guy that, all right, well, it's not the dumbest decision in the world to give this guy that contract extension before he ever played a major league game. And he is somebody that if I'm I haven't even looked at these odds, but like if I'm just trying to say like, all right, who could be like a surprise, you know, dark horse rookie of the year, like he has to be in that conversation, I think. And I don't know how he looks in the field day to day. I am assuming he's working on it a lot, you know, but he's a guy that I'm good. I'm ready to just kind of see him when the games count. To a lesser extent, Chase Young falls in this category because obviously he's not making the team. But like just Friday night, he made a couple nice plays both at third base and second base, and then he had the home run in the ninth. He's exactly what a guy who's knocking on the door and that the organization has sort of said, here is your window of opportunity. And again, I know it's not going to be opening day, but here's your window of opportunity. And he looks the part. He looks the part, and then you see videos of him working with Cora, you know, on certain drills, quick hand drills, all that stuff. So, I mean, that's, again, it's only spring training, but that's for spring training. I feel good about it. And Parker Meadows, Cody, is on this list. Now, I loved seeing him hit a home run and have an infield hit in the same game. That's exactly what you think is sort of like the range of outcomes for his skill set. You know, you can't say that about everybody, but that's the range of outcomes for his skill set. And it also got me thinking, you know, Meadows specifically here, he's not going to be the best player, certainly, on the team. He's not going to be the most valuable player on the team. He's not going to be the most marquee player on the team. But, you know, he might actually have the potential to be the most exciting guy on this team, because if he's making great catches in the outfield, if he's, you know, hitting, I don't know, what is his projection, like 17 bombs or whatever, and he's legging out, you know, getting the extra base, maybe, you know, some steals, like, and he's also kind of the feel-good story of the prospect that kind of took a long time in order to get to the bigs, that guy might be near and dear to the hearts of Tigers fans by the end of it. Now, we talked earlier in spring about like how he's kind of low-key, kind of key for this plan. And if the hit tool doesn't present itself, that's going to cause a lot of problems. So that's all still true. But man, can he just be a really exciting and fun player, and a guy that as much as he could bring this team down, he can also elevate them in certain ways too.
Yeah, we talk about changes to the style of baseball, right? More speed, more athleticism, more ball in play, more of an emphasis on defense. Parker Meadows really embodies that stuff. So I don't know how it will ultimately translate to his WAR. That's going to be based on his hitting. In terms of sheer entertainment value, man, I don't know if there's anyone more fun to watch than Parker Meadows. Just the way he roams the outfield, the way he runs the bases. There's, in a way, it's old school, but it's also like it's up tempo, it's fast, it's fun. You can't not enjoy watching the guy. I will say that he's having a really nice spring. He's done well at the plate, which I think we needed to see a little bit. Still going to be different when he's facing top end pitching every single day. It's different than what you've seen in spring training. But I will say that with Chase Young too. I've been as impressed with him as probably anyone in this camp. The guy can just hit the ball, man. We'll see what happens when he's facing top end velocity every day. It might be a little different, you know, but we know he can hit a certain level of pitching without much question in his defense. First couple days of spring training, I was watching Chase Young and I was like, man, he moves okay. I just don't know if the arm is actually going to play a third. But then based on what we've seen in games, man, his D has been pretty good at both third base and second base. And Colt Keith, dude, this guy's got a really good hit tool. I'm sure there will be some growing pains. I'm sure there will be some adjustments. But, you know, we use that word process. I think it was after Saturday's game. I think Keith walked twice. He didn't get a hit in the game. I was listening to the radio after the game. Craig Monroe basically gave Colt Keith his player of the game. And he said, I just loved his process, his at-bats, his takes were good. The things that a former major league hitter is looking for in a hitter, he saw in Colt Keith. I think Keith has shown a lot of that in this camp.
Yeah, and again, like, those are the kinds of, those little small things are what you just don't know until you see it. And again, with it just being spring training, we all have that caveat above this, but some of those, like, it still probably feels like a big league game for him when he's doing it for the first time, you know what I mean, on a consistent basis. So that it's still important, you know, to whatever degree. And, you know, I had another Meadows point. It just came in my head. Maybe it's too much. Maybe it's too much, Cody.
What do you got?
Is he the most natural looking baseball player on this team? Like, when he makes those long range catches, it doesn't necessarily look very hard for him to get to that spot. He definitely didn't look like he was running the 100 meter dash when he beat out that infield hit on Friday night. And of course, when he gets a hold of a ball, like, his swing is pretty fluid, you know, like, he might be like the most, just, he just looks like everything just kind of comes natural. It doesn't really necessarily look like he's trying hard, if that makes sense, which obviously he is.
You know, I think he is without a doubt. You know, Riley Green is the most talented baseball player, but the guy has a funny running motion, you know. I mean, he has a sweet swing, but he's got a funny running motion. I think Torque looks like a ball player. He's kind of built like a ball player. He's got that easy power in his swing. So a little bit of Torque there. You know, Jake Rogers is real flashy behind the plate, like almost a little like nothing. Meadows can make a flashy play, but it doesn't look flashy. I think that's kind of the point you just made. And so, yeah, I do think he's the most natural looking player on the team for sure.
And I will say, we haven't really talked a lot of Riley Green, you know, this spring training, and because I don't really think we have to, but he's another guy, like, it's one of those things where it, like, goes without saying, like, I'm good, like, it's fine, like, I'm not really worried about him. And but speaking of Torque, though, like, the times that I thought, okay, maybe that's something that he wouldn't, speaking of fluidity, like, maybe not have a struggle with a little bit, or especially kind of early on without facing a whole lot of live balls, he looks like he, how do I phrase this? He looks like he didn't not work on his defense, which is obviously bad last year, in the offseason. You mentioned, like, he is a natural third base, first baseman, excuse me, not third baseman, although he's drafted as one. The pickoff attempt here today, like, you know, catches it, makes a throw to Kreidler. I mean, defensively, Kreidler is on this category as well, but you know, makes a throw to Kreidler, gets the guy out. Feels a hard ground ball. It feels weird kind of giving the guy a compliment for doing this, but it's more about how he looked doing it. Did he look comfortable doing it? Because there are times that he doesn't look comfortable doing some of these things. I have not seen him try to track down a ball in foul territory, though, so that'll be the next step. Sometimes the angles aren't always there. But we'll have to see when it counts, but he's another kind of like, all right, I had to see it and I saw it type deal. So, credit to him. Maybe he has improved. I'm not going to make any claims here, but it looks like at least something that, you know, if you wanted to see him improve, you haven't, like, been disappointed, if that makes sense. All right. Let's go to another thing that we're not talking about. Nobody's talking about it. And maybe that tells you everything. We're just accepting that just Henry Molloy is not making this team. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, it's kind of fell out of, like, yeah, topics of conversation. It's, I mean, because that's the truth. Like, we talked about that early in camp. There's probably not a spot for him on the roster. Now it seems like, okay, yeah, there's not a spot for him on the roster. This guy's going to go to AAA and he's going to absolutely rake. But, you know, it'll be, he's not going to get up until there's an injury or something else causes an opening for him. That's definitely what it seems like. We haven't heard a lot about him in the field, which I almost view as a good thing, right?
Yeah, like, well, we didn't get to it. It's my own fault. We didn't get to it last week, but last Sunday he did make a nice catch in left field. You know, spring training angles. It's not like you. I don't know if it was one of those.
He was going up, like, to the wall.
Yeah.
I thought he kind of, I didn't love, he ultimately made the play, which was good. There was something about the way he was kind of drifting that I didn't love. I felt like he drifted with the ball rather than getting to the spot.
You're probably right. You're probably right. I was going to say we didn't get all the angles that you would normally have because, obviously, you know, it's a spring training thing. But, you know, just talk about a guy that excited. You mentioned him at the top about Scott Harris being slow playing prospects, and here's the prospect that's going to be slower played, you know, and.
But to the defense point, like there have been some moments the past two springs with Kerry Carpenter and Akil Badu defensively where I'd be like, eh. And that hasn't really happened with Malloy. You know, it's just been, he hasn't really been tested, but he's, from what we've seen, he's been fine in the outfield. So that's, I'll take that as a win for now. Obviously, you want to see more, but hey, it hasn't been like avert your eyes ugly.
Which we have seen just in the history of us doing
this
podcast.
That's what I just said, yeah.
So yeah, that was Christian Stewart comes to mind. If we're going to give credit to people, credit for Carpenter, for even though it probably still end up with him being a DH a lot of the time. But
he's gotten better. He's not a vert your eyes bad anymore. I still think he's probably going to be like a minus defender. But he's, yeah. Now, speaking of Akil Badu, man. Akil and probably Javi Baez have been like two of the losers of camp so far. Akil's really been fighting it at the plate, even mechanically. We've seen him, it's kind of weird. We've seen him cycle between this really compact, sweet swing and a swing that just looks really stilted and forced. And he's the hips flying out of the batter's box, but the hands are like behind. That's all I know to say, man. Akil's really fighting it, so also certainly looking like a guy who's going to start in AAA at this point.
Yeah, which, again, for depth, Toledo's going to be very interesting this year. All that stuff is fine. I'd still like to see Carpenter get into a little bit of some kind of groove. I know he had the hammy, so that's, you know, part of it, but it's still kind of time away from development, you know, so I'd like to see a little bit more from him before the season starts. And Javier Baez, I mean, this guy, recycle the conversation, recycle the Twitter posts, you know, like that's something that we're all just going to have to live with until it changes. And, you know, there's a good chance it won't. So that's all I'll kind of say about that. But I did want to say, because I read your mailbag and we've seen it on Tigers Twitter, other Tigers podcasts, and Eddie's Leonard is a guy that just has become the camp hype man. And I was trying to assess like what the real reason for that is, because I don't want this to come across as like me diminishing his potential as a prospect. But I do think that he's the shiny new toy, because he's a recent acquisition, who is labeled as a shortstop, and he's got some nice little, you know, he's got some tools and all that stuff. But it's really just about the Javier, being scorned by Javier, that I think that's been placed into Eddie's Leonard love. Is there anything to that?
Well, absolutely. I did the mailbag, and I got like, I think 4 or 5 versions of like, what will it take for Leonard to either A, make the roster, or a couple versions to, you know, get rid of Baez and start Leonard at shortstop. Which I said last week, like, that's a ridiculous conversation to be having. It's not going to be a reality. You know, Eddie's just having a really good camp. He was one of the short list of guys I most wanted to see this spring training. And he's proven the fact that this guy can hit the ball. I don't know what his best position will be long-term. I don't think it's shortstop, but you're right. I think the real infatuation, the thing that could make Leonard a sweetheart of camp, or the darling of camp, whichever term we're going to use, is like the backup quarterback syndrome. Like
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's contributed to his popularity among the fan base for sure.
Which is funny because the real star of camp is, you know, you mentioned him earlier. The real star of camp is Andy Ibañez. Even your boy Jim Bowden, you know, mentioned him as a guy who stands, you know, he did one for every team, guy who stands out. And
but we got another one. We got a guy who's performing just as well as Leonard. It's Ryan Kreidler, who is a good defensive shortstop. Probably also not going to make the roster, but he's playing well to the degree, like giving you some things to think about. He had a couple strikeouts in Sunday's game I didn't think were very good at bats. But man, I love watching him in the field. He is silky smooth, always has been. And he's not getting quite as much love as Leonard. I think maybe because he's not the shiny new toy, like you
Yeah.
said.
I have a weird, and this is me admitting a flaw of mine, so I don't want to say this is like me being correct. I've gotten to the point with Kreidler who, respect his, love watching him in the field, like you said. Love that he's the son of a sports writer. Selfishly, you told me he's always been, kind to you and all that stuff, so that means a lot to me. But I just, I it's one of those things that when people talk about him, because of the Javier thing, it makes me have to like kind of like not like him that much as like an actual like prospect, because I just, when something gets like way overhyped, like it's just my gut instinct to be like, no, like I'm just not joining you on this train. I'm just not. And unfortunately, Kreidler's like the recent version of that. Which is unfair to him. It's completely unfair. And if I'm gonna make the excuse for Matt Manning earlier about like some injuries, he's also a guy who's had some injuries
Rabies
that
in
is
that
part of the
bucket,
game,
yeah.
and that's surely hindered his development. But I think this is also me kind of looking out for him in a way, because I don't want people to start thinking about him at a certain level that maybe he just cannot, potentially will never reach, and then you're kind of setting yourself up for failure there. So I don't know. I mean, I think I have nothing against Ryan Kreidler. I would anticipate him getting his shot and a more extended look potentially, because there will be injuries that happen. You're right. I mean, I talked about the torque play earlier. Kreidler had two sweet tags in Sunday's game. And so like I do like him, but I just can't like join people like as far as they go with him. That's just me though. All right. Speaking of prospects, so we have this new thing that Major League Baseball is doing. It's the, what do we call it, spring breakout games. Is
Spring
that what?
breakout, which sounds like some sort of venereal disease you would get, in Daytona Beach or something.
Which they had to do this on purpose, because a lot, obviously their spring trainings are in places that are popular spring break destinations, and things happen on spring break, so that is kind of funny. And then and
It's like
God bless the
almost, it's
dog.
good marketing as long as you don't think about it too much.
God bless good marketing, and God bless them for giving us content at this time in spring training, because then it's like initially Jackson Jobe's not on it, right? And it's
I'm
like,
sure
why
MLB is livid at that, by the
is
way. They're trying so hard to promote this, and the Tigers aren't taking one of their top guys. It's kind of funny.
But by the way, if I was MLB, I'd be like, really, bro? Like, really? Like, I kind of would side on MLB on this one, like
Yeah, I
we're
wish Jobe
trying.
was pitching that game. I'm glad he's going to pitch in a big league game, but oh yeah, I want to see, Max Clark playing behind Jobe in the field.
Like, if I was Rob and I was like having a conversation with AJ or whatever, which I doubt they're on texting terms, but if I was having a conversation with AJ, I'd be like, guy, you open camp by saying he's not making the team. We have this thing that we're trying to market young players for the betterment of the game, blah, 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 and he's not on it.
You couldn't find anyone else to throw in the March 12th game or
So.
whatever. No one? Come on.
But yeah, so I mean, we'll talk about it more like after it happens. But I think it is overall a good thing. Like, baseball ought to market the. We talked last week about like the missed opportunity to have Skeens versus Holiday, broadcast
Otherwise, yeah.
on television. So,
We're gonna get it, and you're gonna be able to watch the next Skeens versus Holiday.
yeah. So overall, I think it's a good thing. But we'll talk about it more afterward. Okay, I have an important life update for people.
Here we go.
My wife had to go through the heartbreak of this off season of having two of her top five Tigers be off the team. So one of them was Nick Maton, DFA'd obviously earlier this year, and Andre Lipschitz, no longer with, although he did call him future Dodgers legend in your mailbag, which I did. I just want to let you know I appreciated that. Was also DFA'd. So I told her, I was like, look, you know, there's not a lot to talk about right now. Camp, dog days, all that stuff. So why don't you update the list, and I'll tell the loyal listeners, you know what it is. So she did that literally right before we came on the air here, Cody, and I didn't tell her to make a whole new list, but she ended up making a whole new list. So the one remaining, I guess maybe two remaining, but the one headliner is she's still a fan of the high leg kicks and the tight pants of Tarik Skubal. So she and, you know, that one's aging really well because she might be able to watch him in the All-Star game this year, you know what I mean? So no complaints there. She's loved Javi. We can say it because it's past tense, you know, since the Chicago days. So Javi Baez is on there. Big fan of Akil Badu. She has a jersey shirt, so that's not a surprise. So we have two new additions and a new honorable mention. I haven't even told you this yet. Newly signed, Gio Urshela.
Interesting.
Now keep in mind she is a Red Sox fan. So she picked a former Yankee.
Yeah.
Surprises me. So that's on there. And Miguel Diaz. Not that much mentioned. Miguel Diaz made the list, and the honorable mention, a guy we just talked about. So this is for the reasons why people love him. This is kind of ironic given her list. Honorable mention: Eddie's Leonard.
Okay. All right. Interesting. So, interesting choices.
Yep.
I need to know the rationale behind Miguel Diaz. I like Miguel Diaz as a pitcher, but like. Wasn't expecting that one from Alexis.
She's making the list. She's like, you're gonna laugh at me. I was like, I'm not gonna laugh at you. Like, you know, whatever, you know. And I was like, Miguel Diaz. Okay, that's interesting. I do not think she's seen him pitch at all. So the people that remember this last year is that she's just looking at like the 40 man and like what their mugshots are, headshots are. And then if she wants to like look further, she can. But that's like the basis is just the 40 man and the headshot. So that's two additions to the team, and then keeping Skubal on there as well.
No Colt Keith. That surprises me.
No Colt Keith. And I think she's also just trying to be contrarian by not having future Bachelor contestant Matt Vierling on the list. So. All right. That's how you know it's the dog days right there, as we talk about.
No doubt. It's been, you know, this happens to me a lot on the beat. When it feels really quiet, like that's always when you start getting nervous. It's been a quiet couple of weeks in Tigers camp. Almost everyone's been very healthy. I almost feel like we're due for some kind of news coming in the next week or so. Just a feeling I got.
I mean, it's like you said, it's been a pretty like rudimentary camp, to be honest with you. Like, it hasn't really, I mean, there's exciting things that are happening, you know. You like to see like Ibañez doing well. I like to see Riley Green looking healthy, you know, these kind of things. But it hadn't been anything that crazy one way or another, which maybe overall is a good thing. But again, it's March 10th, it's baseball, something weird's gonna happen, you just know. But you are going back here in a couple days, back down to Florida, Cody. So you're basically 2-2-2 essentially weeks there, back there, and then, you know, obviously the season will start. So I'm curious, after some time away and kind of watching things from afar, what's your mindset? What are you looking for as you go back to Lakeland and start like having to see these games in person and you know, talk to these guys and get some in-person feel from AJ? Like, what's on your mind as you touch down in Lakeland this week?
Yeah, I think some of the things we've already talked about. I mean, it's got to be the pitching, right? That's probably where the real like roster battle is right now. That's who some of the most interesting players naturally are in terms of like Casey Mize. Seeing him tested a little more, like I've talked about a lot. Mize, Manning, Olsen, but also like I feel like I didn't actually watch Jack Flaherty off the mound a ton in my first trip down there. Like, where's he actually at? How's his stuff actually look? What might we be able to expect from him? I think that's got to be the number one topic that'll be on my mind.
Yeah, well, I'm curious because I can't get an assessment myself about him. And if we were giving Scott Harris a lot of credit earlier, and if Flaherty is a – sorry, I have to say it this way. If Flaherty is a flame out, it's not going to be a good look for him because I think we talked about the signing at the time as something that you understood.
It's the one offseason signing I didn't love. Even but when I signed very... him, I was like, I don't know exactly what they see. Talking to Scott, I have a little better idea of what they saw and what they like, but I'm still not sold on it. Now, I have talked to a couple people who are smarter than me who were like, I really like Jack Flaherty. I think he could have a really good year. So those are interesting perspectives to hear. And yes, you can never have enough pitching, but there's a part of me that's like, what if you just didn't sign Jack Flaherty? And you knew you were taking Mize, Manning, and Olsen all north, and if one of them, you know, something happens to one of them, you got an Alex Fiedo, a Bo Brisky, you have some other options, Drew Anderson even. Like, is Jack Flaherty the sixth best pitcher on this staff? I think he could be.
He could be.
But he's going to, he's a shoe-in for the roster because he's on a guaranteed major league deal.
Yeah. And again, by Scott Harris standards, not a cheap one either.
Right. So, yeah, well, when Jack Flaherty makes the All-Star game, we will revisit this conversation.
True. I mean, again, we'll give Scott Harris credit for this. He's like, what, one for one on these 10 plus 1 year contracts on pitchers making all stars. So
Matt Boyd too, who granted wasn't healthy, true. But there was, but forget about the Matthew Boyd deal.
Yeah. Talk about how fast the game moves on, All right, Cody, anything else you wanted to get into before we get out of here?
Man, I think that covers it for now.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for following us on X at Cody Stavenhagen. I am at Kieran_Steckley. Pod pages at Turn Corner Pod. YouTube, Turn the Corner Podcast. Subscribe, Apple, Spotify, 5-star review if you feel so inclined. Subscribe to The Athletic, and you can read all of Cody's work in addition to his wonderful colleagues. So I want to say thank you very much. We still have a lot of big things planned for this podcast. We appreciate you guys sticking with us through the offseason, to the excitement of spring training starting, and now the dog days. But don't worry, the real stuff's coming really, really soon. So for Cody Stavenhagen, I'm Kieran Steckley. Everybody have a great
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.